Hello, it's Friday, and welcome to another episode of We Are Curious. It's been a great week, and I'm happy this week comes with a lot of positive news locally. KNBS has finally done its thing. We finally have the 2021 economic survey out. We've seen some other good news with Kenya being removed from, or rather downgraded from, the list of high-risk areas for piracy after 12 years, yo. So finally, maybe we can see some good things when it comes to trade. My name is Ali Mwakaneno, your usual host, and I am sitting with another super host here. He's the host of a show called Bulls, Bears, and Whiskey. That's a Wednesday night show where you get all your amazing, amazing data, deep dive discussion when it comes to various sectors. A show that you should definitely watch out for on the Hisa Show. Felix?
You can also catch me on Markets Monday. My name is Felix Ocheng, and I am joining Ali Mwakaneno on his podcast. let me just say, because you know, without Ali, it would be hard to have a Curious. But Ali, thanks a lot for bringing me on board. I think it's very interesting to see a lot of things have really happened this week. Starting first of all, just as you've mentioned, the economic survey. That KNBS, after a 4-month delay, they actually brought this up, and there's a lot of data in terms of the GDP figures that we can possibly touch over. But it's also very interesting just to see on what's likely to happen and how everybody out there is moving in terms of, you know, guys just giving the data out there that's happening. Then there's also the bit of markets. Yesterday, I think we saw the Nasdaq drop for the first time in a very long while, and then it's also very interesting that yes, we are finally safe waters. So yeah, okay, not really so safe, because remember, whenever these sanctions are lifted, other guys coming on board, we might see the stock exchange in Somalia really jump up again. That's something that we'll really be talking about later on into this show. Back to you, Eddie.
Yeah, something else that happened this week, rather controversial, was Bolt. Of course, Bolt has added a new category of options, especially for its female riders. You can now access female drivers, but then that came with an additional cost, and that's definitely something that we're going
to
be
talking about. A high additional cost to just to mention, guys. It's not cheap. Cheap is expensive. But it's something we're definitely going to talk about.
Yeah, definitely. And then maybe internationally, what are you looking at, Felix?
Globally, I think first thing, okay, regionally, I think the first thing that we're probably looking at is Jumbojet has started flights to Goma in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Very interesting to see onto that bit. Also, another thing is that we are seeing Rwanda partnering with IFC to develop a vaccine manufacturing plant. Something that's very interesting. And also, talking onto markets and data, Ukraine is actually joining a bit, is joining again into the Bitcoin movement, and looks like Ukraine is going to legalize trading on BTC. Very interesting bits, Ali.
And in case you missed it earlier, of course, Ukraine was not the only big news when it comes to cryptocurrencies this week. We had
El Salvador
bought, actually, El Salvador Bitcoin. Holds, is it 500? I thought it was 400.
500. They made it to 500. And then the moment they bought their Bitcoins, it crashed. So, yeah. And then the president came guns blazing and said, hey, it's IMF doing this. Yeah.
Yeah, and maybe something that might have happened, probably, I think this is more of the week before this, that you might have missed, that could be of interest. Of course, we're definitely not going to go into detail on this, is that, hey, you probably didn't see this coming. We have a TikTok partnership with the government. And I think TikTok is partnering with the local government here to boost tourism, specifically around the wild beast migration. We're struggling with this government to adopt cryptocurrency, and they're like, nah. But then when it comes to, you know, emerging social media, they're there. I did not see this coming here. Anyway, welcome to today's podcast. Felix, what do you want to start on?
maybe let's start up with where the flesh is. You know, let's talk about the GDP figures for the country. There's a lot of data that really came in last week.
I thought we were saving that for Wednesday.
All right. But we can touch on it a bit,
mm-hmm.
so that we can just see what really happened for guys who are probably looking onto this bit. So the GDP figures came out yesterday. The one thing that really stood out was the job losses. Sadly, in our country, we don't have jobless claims, you know, unlike the US where you can track a week-on-week change in terms of guys who are claiming for unemployment benefits.
Mm-hmm.
In Kenya, sadly, you have to wait until, even if you're employed right now and you lose your job right now. Okay, you're employed and you lose your job. You know, the first thing that is going to come out is, even if you wanted to access your pension, it will be a challenge. There's been laws and regulations because with the Finance Bill 2021, there was the leeway where you can be able to access a certain percentage of your retirement or your pension.
Mm-hmm.
But guys are not doing that because even looking at it from the employed guys who've been in government for ages, somebody would tell you that their parent was probably working in the government for ages. And then what happened later is after a few years or after 25 years, 30 years in government, they would only receive a pension of about 25 or 40,000. So you'd imagine if it's somebody, or guys actually receive less. I've seen guys access pension of 5,000 a month from NSSF.
Jesus.
Now you'd imagine if you wanted to access that claim at this point, you probably only saved at NSSF for like say 3 or 4 years. What's that going to be? We saw for the first time in 2020, the last financial year, we saw 740,000 Kenyans lost jobs. 740,000.
Yeah,
just this figure, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
We have 740,000 who were employed in 2019, and then throughout 2020, from January to December, we had 740,000 people. This is documented. Remember, there are those people who are undocumented,
especially in the informal sector.
Yeah, in the informal sector. So we could probably be looking at as high as 2 million jobs lost over that period.
What is my question is, of course, this is data that mostly leaning towards the last year. Yes.
Yeah.
Do you think we might have had a few changes, especially now that we've seen that between last year and this year, especially in the past 3-4 months, we've seen the country open up a little bit. So we've had people can finally fly in and out of the country. We've had restrictions the ban on restriction of movements across different counties and into Nairobi has been lifted. Of course, with time, the curfew was extended from 7 to 10. And now we're hoping that with the vaccine rollout and the new entrants, especially in Kenya, like Moderna, apart from Astra, the country's going to open up a little bit. Do you think we might be able to recover fully from the job losses?
Once we go tech, we never go back.
You know, I think that the quote says, you know, something else, but keep running with what you're running.
Like, come on. Let's say it, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
There are a lot of companies that have come in and have...
Yeah.
A lot of companies have adopted something else.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's very interesting. Companies have adopted tech and it's becoming a very, very big challenge. Look at it from a long-term perspective. We have companies, and an example is companies, let's look at it from Safaricom, which is one of the largest employers outside government. You know, if can you imagine if Safaricom used to have guys do physical marketing, and now they've gone digital and they've seen the levels of digital. First of all, the digital adoption in the country also went high. We saw other stuff like internet penetration in the country also rise. That means a lot of people have moved digital. Now look at it from a point of somebody who was going out and issuing flyers,
mm-hmm.
To guys somebody walking door to door and telling guys, you know what, hey, can I sign you up to the Safaricom home fiber or something like that? Just an example of Safaricom guys. Can you imagine right now Safcom has gone digital and they've seen these numbers rise? What's the possibility that they would probably have more guys come back in to do that campaign for them again? The likelihood is the company might scale down onto that number. And also we've seen a lot of other companies go remote. I think for the first time we're seeing, not for the first time really, but if you look at it year on year, we're seeing that the office spaces in Nairobi has also really grown, not just because of the constructions which have been happening because of guys really doing a lot of investment in real estate, but also look at it in terms of guys really going remote. Companies have learned that if we're not offering goods, then there's a high possibility that we can offer our service, you know, offline, mm-hmm. remotely. Companies, there are certain companies, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Andela is one of those companies that had said that they're going fully remote.
Yeah.
And now we're looking at, now you'd imagine if you're no longer going to an office. So remember, if this company is not going to the office, then there's a cleaner there who's lost their job. You know, just a basic example. There's somebody there, there's a messenger who used to deliver newspapers daily to that office, and now they do not have a job. So if you're looking at these numbers, it trickles down to the lowest bit. But the effect and the likelihood that these numbers could be higher is still very high. And I do not see us going back into that level anytime soon. Because remember, a lot of companies have closed down. A lot of companies have closed shop. Leave alone the guys who've gone remote, but there are a lot of guys who've closed shop, and most companies actually, for those companies that are still surviving, actually downsized.
Do you think, of course, we've seen retrenchments all over the place either some businesses firing people because of reduced incomes, some jobs just becoming obsolete by the virtue of digital adoption. But then again, if you look at other aspects or other sections of the economic survey of 2021 released by the KNBS recently, we've seen a growth in a few select sectors. So for example, we've seen slight growth when it comes to the construction sector. The sector grew by 11.8% in 2020 compared to 5.6% in 2019. And we've also seen a slight uptick in the financial sector, where the sector grew by 5.6. It's not an uptick. Correct me. Let me correct myself. The sector actually shrunk. But then, with the growth in, say, the construction sector, do you think that, in as much as yes, we've lost a lot of jobs, and I'm sure the net job loss here is a net negative here. Do you think we might be able to recover some jobs in other sectors? So for example, construction, and also with digital adoption, there's more hiring when it comes to specific skill sets, like say programmers and developers and all the people involved in the internet economy.
I'd really say it's a long call to say that we would have, it's a long shot to say that we're going to have these numbers back to where they are, because you know most of these companies are downsized, just as you've mentioned, they looked at going digital.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why we've seen for the first time the ICT sector has really, really grown over the past 5 years. Looking at it from the data for last year, the ICT sector had one of the highest growth for our economy. It's always been agriculture, and we're seeing agriculture really growing, but by very small figures as compared to the ICT
mm-hmm.
Sector. And that just tells you, you know, Ali, if you're looking at it from an honest perspective, if say 10 people were advertising mm-hmm. using the flyers,
right,
and then right now you have one person who's sitting behind doing digital management, you know, you probably need two people. You need one guy who's doing graphic design, and then you'll need the other person who's doing the usual marketing. So 8 people, that number has dropped considerably to two guys. So I really think it's still a long shot just to say that we would have these numbers reinstated, or probably have these numbers, you know, back to where they were earlier. Pretty much of a challenge to me, but I'd really love to know what you think.
Not much. I think something that maybe I would bet on slightly is also with this year we've seen the government take up quite a few huge projects. Of course, apart from the port construction, which has been ongoing for the longest while. We've seen that the government has really, really turbocharged its efforts when it comes to the expressway. And I don't know, I think those might be those few areas that might take up Kenyans. But then honestly,
Ali, come on. Okay, let's be honest. How many guys are those guys looking for?
Hey, I'm just trying to, 18 to grasp on a lead here. But then, if honesty were of precedence here, we all know that most of the job losses are not going to be recovered anytime soon.
Yep, we alone, guys. Yeah,
we're on our own.
And yeah. And remember, like, taxes are also coming in. Inflation is rising, and inflation and unemployment are two things that go hand in hand, and they are very, very bad.
And thus, there is a prophet of doom. I think, Felix, let's look at something more positive here, and. The thing that I want to talk about here is, of course, Kenya being removed from the list of from the high risk list. What do you think this means for trade for Kenya in terms of? And I want to look at it at from two angles. First of all, in terms of global shipping companies that would like to bring products to Kenya. Two, insurance when it comes to ships coming here, given that we've had a slight change. I wouldn't call it a slight change, but then I'd call it a vote of confidence towards the lower risk, especially pertaining to piracy.
Can we just say that, first of all, it's good for us to see that the level of piracy within the Kenyan coast has really reduced. And that's a very interesting bit, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
It's an important bit that we're seeing these numbers really post a little bit of a decline.
Mm-hmm.
It's also good because remember that we've been setting for the Lapset project, we have the Lamu port,
mm-hmm.
which is now, once completed, would be one of the largest ports and actually has the largest. It has the largest berth for ships in Kenya. So actually, right, even currently at this time, you know that the berths that the president launched the other day are actually some of the best and some of the largest and most sophisticated in Eastern Central Africa. Can we really mention them? Because let's say in East Africa.
Right.
And remember, Tanzania is really coming in hot on that bit. So when we're looking at this for Kenya, we know that for one of the things that really, really happened over time, we know that Somalia has been a major concern for guys. But I think we can also notice that the level of attacks from the Somalian waters have also really been challenged.
Actually, we've had zero piracy incidences since 2017. That is close to 4 years. Of a clean sheet, which is rather impressive. And
because now it looks like Guinea, which is very interesting, Guinea that you guys have heard about in the news, the Gulf of Guinea has the most pirated waters in the world at this time.
So then
some of the things that guys never really know is, can you guys imagine that some places like Singapore comes third when you look at that list in some of the most pirated waters. Can you imagine that, Ali? Right. One of the world's largest financial centers is coming in as one of the most pirated waters as well. But I think it's because of the isolation of Singapore. It makes it a very nice target. Not telling guys, please. I'm not telling you guys to start listening or probably start looking at, you know, ideas. Don't get any idea, guys.
Yeah, you know, you talked about the Lamu port, and also like 2 days ago we had news regarding that, and it's that the Kenya Port Authority was seeking 17.4 billion to buy equipment and complete construction of two berths at the port of Lamu. It's actually borrowing 12.4 billion from local local and foreign banks, and 3.2 billion is going to go to the completion of the construction of the berths that are of the works at the port that are that's still not yet operational. And also some of the money is going to go to the purchase of marine equipment. 6.1B is going to go to yard operations. And the remaining five billion is going to come from internal sources. I mean,
I think it's a hard figure,
mm-hmm.
because let me give you guys the impression. In case you're looking at this for the first time, guys, I did a little bit of research on maritime waters, and you'd actually note that Lamu project, the Lamu port, and how international waters really put it, there's a website that is known, there's a group of guys who call themselves international waters,
mm-hmm.
and they say that Lamu port is struggling. It's a new facility, struggling to attract shipping lines, and so why are we looking on to building more projects or looking at, you know, investing in more products or more areas that are likely to probably have a drop in terms of earnings? It's like we're working on white elephants, and that's a major challenge, because we're looking at this. Remember that earlier on, it's not that this is the first time,
mm-hmm.
I feel like, you know, like the Lamu port, We know it already has a loan on it,
mm-hmm.
and we want to add more of this. $157 million, guys, looking at this in terms of loan, I think it's quite a big challenge. And for investors, it would be something to really consider before you want to, you know, look into it. But then we know that on the breakdown, $55 million will be going towards the purchase of yard operation equipment. $45 million will be going towards general equipment, security, and ICT installation, and $29 million in completion of the construction works, and finally, $28 million in marine equipment. Much of a challenge.
Question, Felix.
Yes.
A huge part of the Lamu port, rather the business that was supposed to come from the port, was mostly transshipment, yeah?
Yeah.
Ethiopia and South Sudan.
From and to Ethiopia.
Ethiopia and South Sudan. With the current development of, you know, first of all, the relationships between these countries, the internal wrangles happening in countries like Ethiopia, the infrastructure connectivity between, you know, Lamu all the way to northern Kenya and towards the borders of these countries. Do you think this is something that we can look into within the short midterm?
I think it's pretty much of a challenge. I really don't know, but maybe guys, you know, it would really be interesting to get the ideas for investors. But why do you think, yes, we know that the Gulf of Aden is also one of the most pirated waters, actually in Africa after Guinea. Gulf of Aden comes in second as the most pirated water, the second most pirated water in the world. Now, and you know, in case you don't know where the Gulf of Aden is, that is the Horn of Africa, the place that now links all the way to Egypt. Now, that's through the Suez Canal. Now, we're looking at this now, Ali.
Mm-hmm.
Eritrea has come in handy and has actually offered Eritrea and Djibouti. The two countries have been maritime harbor for a lot of imports that go into Ethiopia,
mm-hmm.
and it's actually Djibouti that has been the top. Eritrea comes in second in that bit, but unless somebody's importing something from the southern bit, and that would be South Africa, Mozambique, Tanzania, it might really be a challenge to convince somebody that they need to come to Lamu and not go into, you know, they'd come to Lamu and not go to Djibouti, for example.
Yeah, and I think that was a plan. That was a plan with the government here.
It also meant the distance is so long.
How long are we talking about? Do you know? Because something that, as of course you check that out, something the Kenyan government was planning was was to market the Lamu port to Ethiopian traders mostly. And get this, the idea of marketing Lamu port to Ethiopian was riding on the entry of Kenyan companies into the country. So of course we're looking at Kenyan's activity up there when it comes to drilling, and Safaricom when it comes to Safaricom Ethiopia. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Which I don't know. In my opinion,
From Lamu all the way to the Ethiopian border is 880 kilometers of road.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that from Djibouti to Ethiopia, it's less than 200 kilometers.
Right. I think, I don't know, there's still a lot of questions. Because also remember, look, Ethiopia started, or rather, Ethiopia put in more infrastructure work towards its connection with Djibouti when it comes to like putting in the railway infrastructure, for example, in 2018. And I'm talking about January 2018. And that this is when like Lapset was already ongoing. In as much as we've had assurances from the Ethiopian ambassador to Kenya, there's still a lot of question. And something that people or rather are looking into is the fact that Ethiopia is of course a big country. The population is, you know, close to twice of Kenya, and they were saying that the southern part of Ethiopia especially, in as much as, you know, we're looking at the distance here, the southern part of Ethiopia is closer to the Lamu port.
Ali, it's very interesting, and let me just give guys updated figures.
Mm-hmm.
From the port of Djibouti to the Ethiopian border,
mm-hmm.
it's pretty less. It's about 270 kilometers.
Ethiopian border, we're talking where?
That's the northern.
The northern.
That's, yeah.
Okay.
And then from the port of Djibouti to Addis Ababa is 899 kilometers.
Mm-hmm.
And then now looking at it now from the Kenyan bit,
mm-hmm.
the distance from the port, that is from Lamu to Addis, is 1,200. So about a difference of about 400 kilometers.
Oh, looking at it
in terms of time, should be a distance of about 8 hours.
Mm-hmm.
A normal difference. The only thing which can actually make Lamu port really successful is if we have a lot of piracy attacks continue at the Gulf of Aden. Now with the green light, with a safer spot, guys might consider accessing the goods through the port of Lamu, because, you know, piracy is also very expensive.
Felix, that doesn't sound like you know, the sort of thing that you want to buy to
guys
root
I
for.
Still need to pass through Addis. Yeah, so guys in Ethiopia, please. Yeah,
on a business point of view, it doesn't seem like something that you should, you know, we should look
up. Okay, yeah, yeah. No, I'm looking at it from a geopolitical aspect,
right?
But if you're looking at it from a business side,
mm-hmm.
I think it doesn't make sense. Can you imagine somebody coming from China, for example? How, just look at it, what's the viability? You're coming from China, and then you probably want to, you know, bring in your stuff, and you're being told you have to bring it all the way. You have to go, even look at it from sea.
Mm-hmm.
You have to spend another extra probably 400 kilometers, you know,
mm-hmm.
rather than you just going straight to the Gulf of Aden. Doesn't make sense, in my opinion. Unless they're probably bringing in something from areas like Singapore, Malaysia, Indonesia, Philippines, Thailand, or maybe Sri Lanka, or Southern Africa a bit. South Africa, Eswatini, Mozambique, Tanzania, or Madagascar. I still think it's way viable to use the port of Djibouti if you're going into Ethiopia. But also remember that we've had a lot of challenges, Ali. We've seen Northern Ethiopia really having a lot in terms of destabilization. And that's why the port of Eritrea has not really been supportive, has actually had a challenge bringing in stuff, because remember, the main route that comes from the port of Eritrea has to go through Mekele, and Mekele is a troubled region right now.
And I'm happy you actually mentioned China because, hey, it also happens to be Ethiopia's top export partner. So it's China, Saudi Arabia, United States, UAE, and then Israel. So
where are we, guys? Yeah.
Where are we? Well, I don't know.
Can we make friendship with Addis the way we make the way we're friends with Kampala? I'd really love to see areas where, you know, we can't. Okay, no, that would be being too political.
I'm happy you've walked in and walked into that one without me having to touch it. Felix, moving on. Now that you've discussed a little bit about conflict happening in Ethiopia, let's circle back to Kenya. 2 weeks ago, I think, we talked about the Laikipia bond and something that I'd just like to maybe run by you shortly. We've seen that Laikipia has met the Kenyan headlines, and not in a good way. We've seen violence happening up there. And do you think this will affect the performance of the Laikipia bond that we're waiting for?
Can we just say it's the security operation in Laikipia started in, it came in too early. Too early in terms of waiting for it to get out of hand.
Right.
But it's coming at a good time for investors who might have wanted to invest in that one. Remember that earlier on, CGR ratings gave Laikipia one of the a stable bond valuation.
Mm-hmm.
The South African firm said that there's a lot of reforms, including Laikipia bringing in KRA to help them in tax collection.
Right.
It's a really good thing, but remember, security is always one of the best things. Because can you imagine if you want to invest in an area, and KRA can't get to that place because they cannot, even if it's in terms of business permits, how many guys would probably be applying for those business permits if they're not sure that their business is going to perform? But I think the Laikipia Conservancy is, the area that is in question is quite a very small area. It's just about 360 square kilometers. So still pretty much of a small bit, but we'll be able to look at it. Let's probably say it's in the first week, right? Since the Interior CES announced that there's an operation in Laikipia, but when the county gets to issue the bond, then I know these are some of those analyses that guys will probably be looking at raising before they can have this brought up to them.
When is the county issuing the bond? Do you know the date?
Nope.
Okay, I think that's something that maybe we can possibly pursue and inform guys in the next session. Okay, do you remember? Oh, before I talk about this, do you remember that earlier the government was asking, what do we call this? The government was asking, what's the name of these governmental organizations? Why is it escaping me? Jesus, I should go back to writing news. State corporations, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
State corporations to remit extra cash. Well, a few days ago, we had KAA announcing that it's actually seeking a cash bailout from the Treasury because of its piling debts. And the managing director said that the decision for the Treasury to sort of take up surplus cash from the authority left it broke and unable to settle its debts with the suppliers. Do you think the decision to take up the surplus cash was a good decision?
Can we first say that it's disappointing to see that the Kenya Airports Authority is coming out and saying that yes, we are in debt.
You really? Know? Why is that so?
Because, you know, earlier on there was a proposal by Parliament to have KAA and Kenya Airways, you know, merged.
Mm-hmm.
Not really merged, but to have, what was it called? A special
holding company.
A holding company, an SPV?
It was, I can't remember
what. And KAA would actually have an SPV with Kenya Airways.
Mm-hmm.
Are we going to merge two loss-making entities? Because remember earlier on, a lot of guys had assumed that KAA was on the positive vibe, you know? So it looks like we're not really going to be in a safe space. But remember, also for KAA, they're saying that the biggest liability which they have is the $17.6 billion, a joint venture that they were actually doing with a Chinese two Chinese companies. We have Anhui Construction Engineering Group and China Aerotech Corporation, which KAA had cancelled the Greenfield Terminal project,
mm-hmm.
which they were doing. And so this is actually a fine. That they've been fine. It's a contractual agreement which they had.
Yeah.
And now the contract is getting back to them. You know, it's very sad and it's very interesting to see that for a project that you didn't do, a project that wasn't completed, we're seeing this getting into KAA. We had a lot of hopes that KAA was really one of those parastatals that were being managed, saying some positive edge.
Mm-hmm.
That was, I don't know if this... When did this really get in? Was it after the former CEO left? And remember that the former CEO for KAA, the managing director, had a lot of concerns with the merger with the SPV bringing in the companies together. And that according to his resignation letter, that is one of the reasons why he was leaving. According to the company, when he left, he said he didn't believe that bringing in KAA and KQ would actually have them jump back to profitability.
Actually, yeah, KAA had a fairly stronger balance sheet in comparison.
And
here.
Remember, Ali, just before you finish this, it's so sad that KRA has slapped KAA with a $4.2 billion tax claim. KRA, KAA, Jesus, Kenya Revenue Authority, you guys need to stop. But remember, kulipa ushuru.
Nikujitegemea. Away from the share. Felix, back to something that you said. Earlier you said that KAA had one of the strongest balance sheets in comparison to other parastatals. And in December 2019, I think they gave Treasury around $12 billion in special dividends.
Yeah,
and something that he'd had, apart from, of course, what you discussed with regards to the merger was in their credit, the grounding of flights because of COVID-19. And I usually don't make excuses for government parastatals, but then of course with the freezing commercial flights for the major part of last year, KAA expected a hit.
Is there any airline that probably didn't pay for the landing rights? Because those are some of the things that we need to know, because major airlines usually pay for the landing spot. And I know one of the reasons that some global major airlines posted losses is because they were still paying for some of these landing rights,
mm-hmm.
the landing slots, despite not really flying into certain regions.
Right.
And I don't think KQ was paying, to be honest, guys. Yeah, but...
Well, KQ needs to pay KAA $7.5 billion.
So KQ needs to pay KAA... Oh, my God. Now, Ali, KAA had given to the Treasury about $12.5 billion.
Mm-hmm.
Remember that the fine that the two Chinese companies are actually giving KAA here is at $17.6
billion. Mm-hmm.
With the $12.5 billion that the government took in 2019, give it 1 year and say that it'd probably be around 13 point, let's give it a usual rate, because we know most of these parastatals are actually investing in these securities, the funds in fixed income securities.
Mm-hmm.
Give it a 10% rate, $12.5 billion. We are seeing the returns probably at say $13.7 billion. If you give it the liability that they have, which is $17.6 billion, KAA would still probably have a deficit of about $3 billion.
Right.
So yeah, but at least it would have been better. So and it also brings into concern just how many other parastatals or government institutions out here into certain liabilities that we do not know about. It would be interesting to see just for Kenya Pipeline, It would be interesting to just see to what exposure that company has, and also remember other companies, other loss-making entities that were supposed to be listed, like National Oil of Kenya. We would just want to see.
Yeah, and I'm happy you talked about interest rate here. Well, since that's not happening, we've seen that KA actually announced that it's accruing interest on pending bills to the tune of up to 12 million a month. So I guess that's more bad news for you, Felix. Maybe moving on to something else. I think our last thing for Kenya as we move towards regional areas, of course, is what happened with Bolt. So as we've seen on the Kenyan social media space, we've had a high number of complaints when it comes to carpooling drivers, mostly from Bolt, at least from what I've seen. We've seen quite a number of harassment cases. And then the company, I think a few days ago, decided to ameliorate the situation by introducing a category of female drivers. And I think I'll let Nicole, who is the woman on this show, to talk about it more.
The lady
on this show. Apologies, my lady.
Mm-hmm.
Hi, Nicole.
Hi.
Yes, welcome to the show.
Thank you. So just to comment about the Bolt issue, I mean, Bolt already has a bad rep, so it isn't a surprise that the solution they were trying to give people received a lot of backlash. One way to look at it is that they're trying to insinuate for women to feel safe, we have to pay more.
Mm-hmm.
But another way to look at it is that they're actually listening to complaints and trying to make us feel safer by providing a women-only service. So, I don't know. What do you think? What do you think, Ali?
I feel like... Okay. So, the idea was to provide a safer platform, a safer platform for women.
Yeah.
And I don't think the approach was really, really the best. It was as simple as putting more protective mechanisms to ensure that they can hold the drivers accountable.
Yeah.
In case incidences do arise. B, take more proactive steps into making sure that they can easily detect incidences, or clients or drivers, I don't know whoever's affected here, can as easy report incidences as they happen to avoid these things from happening. Happening to begin with, because I feel like having female drivers is, I don't see any fault in that. But then charging more is the issue.
That's
for me
exactly
here.
What I was about to say, Ali. You know, Bolt is here,
mm-hmm.
and they're technically telling you, and you know, and let me say, like, as a man, we don't have issues for
that
men.
Never ends well.
No, Ali, you know, we never have issues of men being assaulted out here.
Yeah.
Not really issues. We never just have the publicity. But then, can you imagine? You're basically being told, as a man, you handle whatever it is as a man. For ladies, if you can't handle paying the lower cost, then you need to pay premium to access your safety. You know, and also remember that we've seen a lot of issues. There are a lot of issues with Bolt, man. I don't want to go personal, but come on, guys. That was not the approach. Why is it? Why, you know, the basic question that somebody asked yesterday on Twitter is, why is it only Bolt? Do we have
good
Uber
question.
Drivers? Yes, I know we've seen incidences where Uber drivers, but why is it that Bolt is always on the top? If you're looking at this, if you look at the list in terms of where you might probably see your phone lost, your items lost, a driver probably charging excess, you know, they do weird things with their app. Come on, really?
Weird things.
Doesn't make sense. But I think it's very unfair. I think it's a little bit, it's quite unfair for the company to charge more for safety. This should be a corporate practice where they should first of all have to train their drivers.
Mm-hmm.
And I think one of the things that somebody said is that Uber really does a lot by just educating their drivers. And that's why a driver would be very cautious on Uber, because they know that Uber can take a lot in terms of actions. And because somebody said that a driver would have both the Uber app and they would have the Bolt app as well. But the way they treat you when you order through Bolt is not the same way they would treat you when you order through probably Uber.
Proactive proactivity. That's all I have to say.
Very sad.
Moving on. Regionally. Tanzania, Samia Suluhu. Congratulations to the Tanzanian legislators for ratifying the Africa Continental Free Trade Area. Jesus, this word is so long. Felix, after 1 year, still the AfCFTA is still something that I mess around with.
Remember when we were talking about this, when they all took a picture somewhere and they said, you know what, we're going to have this.
Right.
We're still 1 year and guys are still looking for signatures.
Well, technically, in our defense, Eritrea is the only country that's yet to join the AfCFTA.
We're looking on to making it official and everybody starting to use the regulations that's around.
Treading under the AfCFTA started on paper, at least.
On paper, yeah. But
January 1st, 2021.
Yes, but that is on paper.
That is on paper. Yeah. Of course, there are a number of concerns. There are a number of concerns to be answered here. First of all, maybe just giving up our new listeners a tidbit. So the Africa Continental Free Trade Agreement is expected to sort of connect countries within the continent with a total GDP of around $3.4 trillion USD. Yeah, we're looking at opening up new jobs of up to the tune of 2 million. The market size is going to explode all the way to 1.2 billion. Yeah, and apart from just improving, you know, the movement, improving trade between different African countries through providing favorable policy. Of course, we're going to have things like standardization when it comes to the quality of goods and services that can pass across Africa. We're going to have things like a joint infrastructure project that will allow businesses to easily move their products within. It's also going to allow Africa or other African countries to negotiate as one front when it comes to dealing with externalities, which, caveat emptor, of course, is not happening since we've had a few bilateral agreements here and there. In as much as trading another AfCFTA took effect on the 1st of January 2021, there are a lot of questions we need to answer. There are a lot of questions when it comes to, so what happens when two African countries have a conflict of interest in terms of their exports? How do we harmonize the different standards? Of course, we have like crazy, insane differences when it comes to the investment, for example, in infrastructure. In this case, road, rail, air infrastructure across different countries. And in case you want to really get the picture, look at countries like DRC versus, say, Kenya. There's a huge, huge difference. In as much as, yes, we're discussing policy, in as much as, yes, we're promising inter-country cooperation, there are a lot of things that we need to do on the ground. And hey, I know this is a mouthful, but then we're planning something here at TISA and the Kenyan Wall Street. We'll be hosting a few Twitter spaces in the short-term future that will break down the business opportunity in Africa. Of course, that will break down the business opportunity in Africa. And of course, the trading room is taking like a huge point in this. And we're going to start the discussion from what's happening around the EAC with, you know, our new boys around the block like DRC, Congo. What are some of the harmonizations? What are some of the conflicts that we've had in terms of, for example, ratifying key trade agreements with externalities like the UK? We've seen a lot of push and pull between Kenya, Uganda, and Tanzania when it comes to that. And how can countries in the EAC sort of work in synergy with the collective African region here through the AfCFTA? Of course, that's something that is cooking, and I will update you on how that goes.
Ali, why has Ethiopia, has Eritrea failed to sign the AFTA?
Probably have to ask someone in Eritrea. I don't know yet.
But I think we need to, maybe one of the things we need to talk about is also about the authoritarian, if that's how you call it. Yeah.
Right.
Governance that we have in Eritrea. It's a presidential system, but it's more, you know, the president is basically everything. He can dissolve parliament. He can, do they even have a parliament? Jesus.
In mother tongue, kwani unaobeba aje. Anyway,
But it's interesting. I think it would just be interesting to just see, does it want to be like, you know, make history as Eritrea was the last country to join? You know, come on, man.
Mm-hmm.
If Egypt has joined, if Uganda, of all countries, has joined. Ali, do you have anything on Uganda? Man, it's been long before we talked on anything about Uganda.
No, and let's not touch it. I think a country that we can look at as of course, I think of ways to answer your question on Eritrea is Rwanda. And we've had a few developments with Rwanda and the vaccine. Felix?
Well, guys, in case you're wondering, the African unicorn country, if we were to say it something like that, the African good kid, the best kid on the block, Rwanda, is out there and it's making moves.
Do you have a paid partnership with them? Do you have those Visit Rwanda t-shirts?
Oh, no.
Right.
No, I don't want to go personal the way the president did the other day on the Visit Rwanda stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But guys, here's something that you need to know. Rwanda has actually partnered with one of the largest vaccine manufacturers in the world to, you know, bring vaccines by setting up a vaccine manufacturing hub in the country.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know, man. I think it's actually, you know, a very huge challenge that we're seeing some of these things going into Rwanda. Well, it's good to see other countries, but man, we're missing in, you know, we are missing in a lot. And I think this is one of them. This is one of the largest challenges that we actually could be facing as various countries within the East African region. This should have gone to Uganda, in my opinion. Remember, Uganda has one of the largest medical hubs. We have companies like Cipla, you know, in Uganda.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but anyway, let Rwanda pick up from somewhere. We're looking at this, and I know there's also the International Finance, IFC, which is also coming in to you know, support Rwanda in developing the vaccine manufacturing facility. And this would also help in minimizing the vaccine shortage, which has been a concern for Africa. Remember that earlier on there was a report that in Africa the vaccination rate currently is at about 3%, and we're seeing other countries as high as 90% and 98%. And this also comes with, you know, we're looking at other countries having this higher. Remember, President Joe Biden in the US said that vaccination is now, Ali, how do you call it?
Well, vaccination for a select number of workers is mandatory. Well, which will put the vaccination numbers in the US to at least 100 million. This is against a population of, I think, around 308 million, last time I checked. 328 million in 2019. So Biden is going heavy on vaccination, pushing for the vaccination of at least a third of the country. To answer your question on Eritrea, Felix, what we have out there is that the government of Eritrea's hesitance towards the FCFTA is that it believes, this is a stance that they've held since 1994, it believes that we should focus on incremental or achievable results, which include nurturing first the building blocks or Ethiopia is holding back because it believes that Africa should focus on first nurturing the regional economic blocks. It's more achievable, at least according to the government. Of course, we definitely have to dig more about that. Felix, there's something that you mentioned here, and which is Biden and vaccination. You're the market expert here. Do you think the fact that Biden has ordered employees of big businesses to be vaccinated, or go for testing is going to, I mean, it's definitely going to ramp up the number of vaccinations going up. What do you think this will mean for vaccine stocks as we move towards the closing of this podcast, when we touch on global markets?
Very interesting. I think this would be a positive vibe. And remember, guys are looking at more of economic data and also the vaccine data. It's really interesting to see just the effect they're having on health stocks. But I know that's something we'll definitely be able to catch up with next week on Wednesday.
Definitely. And then something else that we're looking at. Yo, me, I didn't see this coming. Forget El Salvador. El Salvador had already started the Bitcoin craze somewhere in the middle of the year. So them purchasing 500 Bitcoin is definitely not a surprise. Felix, what do you think is happening with Ukraine? And of course, this is our last thing up in this discussion. What do you think will be the effect of Ukraine legalizing Bitcoin?
Well, guys, first of all, let me tell you guys, let me just give you guys a bit of an overview. Is that Ukraine, I really don't see anything going to happen big.
Really? Because we saw what happened with Turkey. Do you remember when Turkey banned Bitcoin and
the valuation for
BTC went red.
The valuation for Bitcoin, and look at it in terms of comparing this if you try and look at the Ukrainian, let me just figure out how they call their currency. It's a bit challenging, guys. They're calling it Ukrainian hryvnia against one Bitcoin.
As you look into that,
it could take you 10 million Ukrainian just to get one Bitcoin.
But then
one Bitcoin is an equivalent of 1,213,788 Ukrainian hryvnia.
Felix, don't you find that a little bit duplicious, especially when you compare one BTC to Kenyan shilling? Or let me make it sweeter for you, Ugandan shilling.
Ugandan shilling.
See, guys, so
you know,
chill. We're in a worse position already, okay?
Actually, you know, if you want to buy one Bitcoin in Ugandan shilling, guys, you need a basket. You need a whole bag.
No,
because okay, let me just give guys the number, Ali.
Right.
You need 160,062,286 Ugandan shillings to buy one Bitcoin. Oh my God. Can you imagine?
Can you repeat that again?
160,062,286 Ugandan shillings.
Right.
To get one Bitcoin. Can you imagine, like, you are a millionaire all of a sudden in Uganda, and then shoo, money's left, and yeah.
Felix, maybe an update that I'd love to give you guys. Ukraine just kind of bumps us up. Of course, it's not. Ukraine has legalized Bitcoin. Cuba announced that it will recognize and regulate cryptocurrency. Of course, El Salvador adopted BTC's legal tender. And Panama is considering it. They presented a bill to legalize BTC.
Pretty much interesting, guys. Let's just say Bitcoin, it's a long discussion on Bitcoin. It's a long discussion on cryptocurrency.
Mm-hmm.
But also remember the effect that it had on El Salvadorians on the day that that they actually adopted it. The guys who sold in the morning, you had somebody buy your Bitcoin in the evening, it was down 10%.
Mm-hmm.
So pretty much of a challenge.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much it. Maybe, Felix, I don't think I have something else from from my end. Maybe as we wrap up the podcast, maybe we'll open the floor a little bit for guys on Twitter and Telegram, in case they have any questions
for,
or comments.
For the guys on Twitter or on Telegram, you can definitely just let me know. Raise your hand if you want to comment on something and I'll let you speak. The same happens with our guys who joining in on Telegram. Okay, I can see there's none. So guys, I guess that's it. It's been an awesome session having you guys on board. Always thank you for joining in during the Way Curious session. And see you guys on Monday as we talk about Markets Monday. And also, we'll be able to see you guys again as we talk about Bulls, Bears and Whiskey on Wednesday.
Of course, definitely. This podcast was brought to you by HISA. That's where you want to get your latest market data. That's when you want to get all those trendy charts. And that's where you'll be wanting to trade on US stocks soon enough. My name is Ali Mwakaneno. This show was co-hosted by Felix Ochieng and the almighty Nicole. See you next
time. Nicole Amaya. Bye-bye.